As far as authenticity, your authentic self, do you think that can change, or is there this identity that you have to uncover, and that's always been you?
It can absolutely change, and it can go from one to the other. You can be incredibly authentic and go to an imitator and vice versa.
Yeah,
I think that, or even, you know, and they wouldn't be home whenever I was supposed to do my chores, and so I would fake it, like the vacuum. This was so stupid. I was an idiot. And I didn't plug in the vacuum, but I would run it all over the entire house just to show there was a path there.
My so I would go find myself, like, yeah, you're just going to go get drunk on the weekend.
If there's no struggle there, you gain nothing.
About relationships. Like, how do you know your wife's being authentic with you? Welcome to Charting Life, a podcast where we have a bunch of different conversations, essentially trying to explore the unexamined areas of our life. And as good old Uncle Socrates once said, the unexamined life is not worth living. So we'd like to have a life worth living. What about you?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely, I mean, if you got no purpose in life, don't you usually just die after that?
Yeah, you know, I was just reading through a couple of quotes, and I think it was Theodore Roosevelt, which I like him, and he said that basically no person has a name worth remembering who had an easy life.
Yeah.
You know, you got to really push yourself and go hard. So one of the things I think of is, assuming I get old and have a deathbed type of thing, like, do I want to look back on my life and say that it was a life well lived? Or do I want to go there with a bunch of regrets? Because people say, I don't want any regrets. I don't want to live with regrets. Like, you should probably live with some regrets. You know, there's some things you should probably regret.
You learn from it. You gain wisdom. You know, if you do nothing in life, you know, if you don't have any failures or regrets, then you've learned or gotten better at nothing. So,
gotten better at nothing. I like that.
You've gotten better at nothing. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Oh, man, that was Abraham Lincoln said that?
I think it was Michael Scott, actually, quoting Wayne Gretzky. Sorry.
All right, we're just coming here with all the quotes today. All right, so one of the things we want to examine in our life today is, authenticity versus imitation. You know, so there's plenty of questions we can have exploring this topic. So, which is better? You know, authenticity or imitation? Why do we seem to go for imitation if we typically say being authentic is better? So, like, so many questions we can have that. But Andrew, how would you perhaps define authenticity? Like, when someone says authentic, what comes to mind?
Well, it's the real thing. It's kind of like if you get an authentic fruit versus, you know, synthetic or, you know, artificial, you know the difference. You definitely know the difference. You can usually taste the difference. You know, so authentic is just the real deal. It's the real thing. It is what it says it is, you know, whether that be on a label or a person or a device or something. It's kind of like when you buy something, maybe even if you get a knockoff version,
right?
You can usually tell something. It's just a little off. There's just something not right about it. I'm not getting, you know, all the features and you know, all the capabilities that the real thing has. So
I agree. You know, it's funny we mentioned food. We had a previous episode with Derek from Grain Free Homestead, and he talked about that. He's like, you know, with homesteading, there's like, yeah, some people they do it for money and stuff, but you know, in the beginning, it's gonna be quite expensive. But more than anything, like, you know what you're eating. I was reading somewhere recently that you go to the store and buy organic, that doesn't make it organic.
Like, no.
There's so many other stuff that just means there's certain things that your food's not sprayed with, but that doesn't mean there's so many other stuff. And it's
pesticides they're using.
So now when my wife and I go to the store, you know, we'll look at the organic that's like twice as much as the other vegetables. I'm like, what's the point?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, anyways,
well, it's kind of you know, nuts, or you get organic beans, and it's like, what? How does that even work? Or a banana, like, you get an organic. And I guess maybe, you know, if the pesticides are, like, seeping through the skin and getting to the actual fruit, maybe I get that.
Yeah.
But either way, you're still getting pesticides.
Yeah. So, another thing you also mentioned was technology. Man, phones are so expensive, like the really good ones, you know, whether it's the iPhones or the Samsung Galaxy, whatever, the, like the top name phones.
Yep.
You know, they're quite expensive, and so like usually my budget is not for that. And even though they have the price must go, oh, you can pay $20 a month, I don't want to pay $20 a month for 2 years or whatever that comes out to be. You know, usually we go for budget phones. I do my research and try to find it, make sure I get everything. But it's not the same because you go for a cheaper thing. But at least for my wife and I, we know what we're getting.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going in with the illusions that this is going to be a top of the line phone.
It's going to be just like the real thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You kind of understand already. Yeah. It's a imitation of that. If you want to go there with that. Well, it's kind of like even I got these Pixel earbuds. You know, I had gotten the knockoff brand several times, and I was like, it came to a point where it was like, okay, I'm gonna buy the real thing this time. I'm gonna see how that actually functions. And of course, once I got it, I was like, wow, this thing's got so many features, and you know, like it can do this, it can do that. My other ones, like, I don't know, sometimes the left ear would just go out or it didn't fit right, or you know, stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, it's cool having the real thing. Luckily, I got it when it was on sale. So
I think helped. Probably when in technology, we'd probably say high quality.
Yeah,
you know, it's probably maybe a more accurate specific term, but still, it's the same, you know, concept. You're going for what's best.
Yeah,
and I think as personalities, you know, and you know, it's important to, I guess, find who you are authentically.
Mm-hmm.
But and again, that opens a whole can of worms, which we're going to try to look into today. Mm-hmm. We see a little trail on our island. We're going to go down and figure that out. I don't know, I want to get your thoughts on when people talk about, like, finding themselves. I don't even know if younger people, younger than millennials, use these phrases. I'm like, I'm going to find myself. I'm going to discover who I am.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something there, but typically when someone says that, or when I was younger and I heard someone say that, my eyes would roll. or internally, I would scream,
I'm going to
go find myself. It's like, yeah, you're just going to go get drunk on the weekends.
Yeah, I don't understand. Like, how does somebody find themselves? Like, I feel like in order to find yourself, and I'm throwing up air quotes, you know, you'd have to go through some type of turmoil or some type of event that's going to test your character, that's going to allow you to say, this is my capability, because that's how you know who you are, right? That's what you're looking for, I guess, when you're finding yourself.
Yeah.
So or are you developing who you want to be? Like, I don't know what I want to be out in the world, so I'm going to go out and do this and that, and hopefully, you know, I decide.
Right. So, I mean, I think that kind of just, you know, the finding yourself, the way we're talking about, the way that we've often heard it said, is something more like, I'm going to go find out what I like and what gives me joy. And, like, there's something to be said about that. Like, you want to know things that interest you, and you, whatever your life is, you want to put it in a direction that's good.
Mm-hmm.
But your character is vitally important to who you are. And I would argue that who you are is your character. And there is essentially who you strive to be. There's who you are, and there's who you perceive to be. Because some people, they perceive you incorrectly, you know, but there's still the presentation of who you are.
Yeah.
But are you a person who, you know, lies when you have something to lose? That begins to be a part of your character the more that you do something. And so I really like what you mean. You know, finding yourself is a lot more about essentially finding challenges and discovering who you are under pressure and then aiming and striving towards something.
Yeah.
You know, not to bring up Theodore Roosevelt again, but here we go. Whenever he suffered any tragedy or loss or something, you know, heartbreaking in his life, he would send himself in some kind of a trial, an expedition. So when he lost his third bid for running for election, again, I think this was 1912. Fact check me if you're a history person or you know how to Google. I don't know, whichever one. But basically, he was going to go for a third term for U.S. president, and he did not get the nomination. So he decided to take a trek through the Amazon because of that. And they went, you know, there's a book called The River of Doubt that gives you the whole thing about that, which is a really good book. But basically, because he had this major roadblock in his life, he decided to go and do something difficult and learn about himself. And so that's probably a better way of finding yourself. Not everyone can go get a ticket to the Amazon, and most of us would probably die in the first 12 hours. Most likely I would, I'm sure. You know, if I get lucky and the snakes stay away.
Yeah.
That's my thing. It's like the snakes are going
to... There's some knowledge to be had there before you can go out on something.
If you got a good guide, you probably go a little while. But the point is, you may not be able to go to the Amazon and do that, but like you can still test yourself in certain areas. You know, maybe do something hard. One of the things I've gotten off track of doing this, but like a daily checklist of things I need to do every day. And one of them was do something that I don't like. And I have that, you know, for my son too. It's like, you know, every day, your task list, brush your teeth, you gotta, you know, whatever.
Yep.
Do at least one thing that you don't want to do. And doing that, and you're actually accepting that challenge. Mm-hmm. Man, I think that's a good thing to do, and it helps you grow.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. That's what I was going to add is, you know, when you struggle, when you put yourself through any type of struggle, it doesn't matter if you succeed or fail, you've grown. You've definitely grown. Any, you know, top entrepreneur or, you know, just someone who's had a lot of success in their life is going to say the same thing. Like, put yourself in an uncomfortable situation and go out and fail. If you can get good at learning to fail, then you're going to be massively successful in whatever it is you try to do. You know, whatever. Yeah, it doesn't have to be money or
right.
anything, just anything. You know, it's kind of even similar for your brain, how your brain works. Like, you can read books all day, every day, right? Mm-hmm. But if they're easy, if there's no struggle there, you've gained nothing. You
right.
know, maybe you've created a little bit of maintenance. I mean, if you're reading a child's book, then you might start taking on, you know, a smaller vocabulary.
Well, I mean, you are essentially a product of your surroundings, at least mm-hmm. in part.
Oh, yeah.
Some people like to think, I'm not influenced by anything, which means you're just unintelligent. Or you're ignorant. Sorry. Wrong research. You're
that might be, yeah.
maybe that's yeah. it. But basically, you're ignorant because everyone's influenced by something. As a youth pastor, I'd have to say things like, if you show me your friends, I'll show you your future. You know, you become who you hang out with.
So it's true. Kind of it really is true, you know.
It is. But like I said, if you're reading a child's book, you're going to talk that way. And so one of the things, like you mentioned, on reading books, in 2020, we're all trying to, like, do whatever. And I was like, you know what? I guess I'll better myself by reading. And I do more audiobooks. I'm able to do other things while I'm doing it. And I am able to pay attention and listen. Maybe it's an ADHD
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
But I know there's a big divide over audiobooks or reading books. And if you have your opinion, why don't you go ahead and go to our Facebook page and leave comments, or on YouTube, whatever, wherever you're at. Like, listen, just leave some comments and let us know what you think about it and why the other side is wrong.
Yeah.
Nicely. But anyways, I do a lot more audiobooks. And so while I realized I was going through a bunch of books I was interested in, I decided to give myself certain challenges. So basically for 2020 through 23, I listened to 50 books a year or read. So it was 50 books a year, but I had
wow.
certain categories. There had to be something like 5 were biographies, 5 were by authors who were already dead before I was alive, you know, so I want to get a different era of history. I wanted like 5 that were fiction, and then I needed at least 2 to 5 books where I believed I was going to disagree with the book. So the premise or the thesis of the book, like, I am probably going to disagree very strongly with the, you know, what I think this author is going to say.
Gain an understanding.
Then, yeah, and I want to understand what, you know, the opposing side of what this particular topic is.
I like that.
And so I think I was able to grow quite a bit there because, as I'm sure lots of us have learned over the last few years, there's, you know, it's almost like debate has kind of come to the regular. So it's not just yelling on Facebook or Twitter or whatever. You know, there's it seems like almost debate lingo has kind of seeped into the common thing as much. And so you hear things like fallacies and straw men. And basically, I don't want to straw man the other side. If I believe I'm right, I want to run that against the more intelligent, better answers from the other side.
Yeah.
And so that's not, I mean, that's politics, religion, whether it's audiobook or physical reading copy, whatever it is.
Well,
but basically, I want to push myself to grow against resistance.
Yeah. I mean, and when it comes to authenticity and imitation, I mean, authenticity would say, I want to test everything that I believe. I want to make sure that this is what I believe is the real deal. Let's look at another perspective, because perspective is everything, right? I mean, how you look at anything is, yeah, I mean, yeah, it could literally either cause, you know, depression or joy just based on how you're seeing the world. Now, granted, there's, you know, other things possibly at play in that. But, you know, if you don't understand the other side, if you don't try to understand the other side of the argument, then, yeah, at that point you are being ignorant and you're just imitating your tribe or
yeah.
whatever it is that everybody else is telling you to believe. You haven't actually seen and know for a fact these are the actual facts, versus just hearing something on the news or something and going, oh, that's real because my team said it.
Right.
You have no idea.
Right.
There could be
yeah,
corruption.
Yeah.
There could be, there's a lot of, yeah, there, yeah, imitation.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, a lot of people probably do want, especially like when you mentioned news and stuff, I think a lot of people do want to present the truth, but there's still this thing where people do have their bias and agenda. And I think I always respect those, especially when it comes to news and politics and stuff, those who are honest about what they believe. Mm-hmm. So if they're, you know, conservative, they say, look, I'm a conservative, I'm going to try to present the best I can, but understand this is my bias, and so I'm probably going to lean more conservative in the way I report things. And then on the liberal side, yeah, you know, like, I'm more liberal, I'm going to try to present the facts as it is, even if it's not, you know, whether or not it's something that would make my side look good, mm-hmm. but I'm also going to lean this way, so it's good to know that. So do you think you have a personal story about where you've been able to identify authentic versus imitation, whether it's in yourself or
oh, yeah.
somebody else? What you got?
Oh, there's a few things, but there's one story you're involved in.
Uh-oh.
It was when I came down to Florida and I wanted authentic tacos.
Yes.
Yeah, I believe this was before the actual taco craze. There was not really like street tacos that hadn't hit the scene. It was still like hard tacos, soft tacos, you know, that you would get wherever, restaurants. And I think we would always go to Tijuana Flats, and that kind of like started the whole thing. I was like, man, I just want to go like where Hispanic people are going and getting their tacos. I want to get the real deal. Like, yeah, so you and I ended up going to that authentic Mexican restaurant.
Right.
So authentic that there were, yeah, I mean, it was only Hispanics in there. And I think maybe it was a nightclub.
Yeah, I think that we were probably the only people in there, I think.
Yeah, there was like some hammering going on in the background, like some weird nightclubish looking room, and then we were off to the side. I think we I can't remember if someone seated us or if we seated ourselves.
I think they did, but it was one of those things like, I'm surprised the menu had English.
Oh yeah. And it was just like, waited. Well, I just remember asking for salsa, and like she brought out verde sauce. Like, it was just like, she clearly, like, salsa is sauce in Spanish speaking countries.
Maybe,
like,
yeah, maybe that was their standard, you know.
Yeah, so then they were like,
yeah, that was...
I remember she looked at me weird, like, salsa, what? And brought out some verde, and we're like, this is different. Yeah. But I do remember that meal being amazing.
It was good.
Yeah.
So there's actually a place here in Louisville. It was a Vietnamese place that opened up. They had reopened over the last couple of years. And I got a date night. Like, okay, we're going to try to check this place out. So we got there. We ordered something. It took a while, but we looked around, and we're like, we're the only white people in here. You know this is going to be good. You know, because every other person, you know, is Asian. I'm assuming Vietnamese, you know.
Yeah.
But,
you're like, they like this.
Yeah, they like this. This is their thing.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, they were...
Because you might hate authentic. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe
don't. It always depends.
Well, they were doing karaoke, and we were getting ready to head out, and they asked me if I wanted to do karaoke with them. And I think Tiffany had already gone out to the car, and that's, like, not her thing. And a part of me wanted to just, like, you know what, let's go for it. I think they wanted me to
come on, you can do it. You're like, I do want to. I really do want to.
Like, my wife just walked out. Because I'm like, I don't.
Yeah.
But, like, I want to jump on the opportunity because they want to do the Party in the USA song.
Oh,
and maybe
wow.
Because they want to just have a white guy do that.
This would be so great.
Oh,
he's
man.
White and
yeah, this would be
American
great.
And
so, but yeah, it was all, you know, it was good nature and everything. It seemed like it would be great. But yeah, you kind of want to go where, you know, the people, like, you know, if you want Chinese, as much as I love some sample or wherever,
it's,
you know,
not the, that's
you
not
get
real.
Your
New York, I mean,
style,
yeah.
Chinese, like, it's real good.
Fried
but,
chicken with sauce on it,
yeah,
and some
that's,
noodles.
But that's not,
yeah,
you know,
it's or rice,
yeah.
Whichever.
And like, as much as you might love KFC or Cracker Barrel, not trying to, you know, do shots fired at them, but
it
if you want Southern home cooking, you go to somebody's house in the South.
That's right.
And you're gonna get sweet tea so sweet you're gonna be a diabetic, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
But anyway, true. So yeah, you gotta go for the authentic.
Yeah.
I remember one time I tried doing this thing where I wanted to mix multiple ethnicities into a single dish.
That's never a good
call. Actually worked out pretty good.
Did it? What? Well,
yeah.
Okay, well, I gotta
so
know.
So I wanted to do, again, I wanted to be authentic, not just taking whatever the American version of it is. So the first one I did, it was American, Italian, and Mexican into a single one. So I made a burger.
Okay, that could work.
Right, yeah.
That
so,
could absolutely
so I made
work.
A burger. It was made with a bunch of, like, I think it was, like, adobo and some of the other spices that would be, you know, that you're finding a lot of Mexican foods.
Yep.
And then I was able to use, like, an Italian creamy salsa or sauce for the burger as well. And so
okay.
that was something I did. Then I did, like, a German, Chinese, and Indian, which seems
ooh,
weird.
That sounds like a gut
so
turner there.
There's someone I knew who had... spent like a year or so in China, so I tried to get some details. Like, we're not going to go to the mall and go to the Chinese food or whatever.
I got
to
know what you made.
Yeah, I use some of the German meats. I use in China, apparently, they do lots of vegetables. Bok choy is one of them, cabbage, that sort of thing. So I was able to, I forget what it was.
That works.
It wasn't quite a salad, but I made something.
Maybe a little krautish.
Yeah, something of that. And I forget what I did. Indian, but I think I'm going to put some Indian spices in there. So okay, it wasn't quite curry, but it was something. Yeah, so it was an interesting mixture. And then I had like a, like, you know, like Indian tea for the drink and all that stuff. So it was pretty cool. But again, I was going for authentic, and you know, it was unique and weird.
I was gonna say, like, I think if I were to do that, I might go with like something Greek and Mexican.
Okay.
Just because, you know, they kind of like pico, and then I can't remember what it is, the Greek type of salad. It's almost like pico. I think that there's cilantro in it and everything like that, like and tomato, and it's almost all the same ingredients as pico, just a little different. But yeah, like basically you could use that and then, you know, put it on a gyro and it
pretty much pretty good. So if anyone has, you know, an idea, if you want to start a restaurant, just let me know. I can give you some ideas of how to make the menu and stuff. But and also, you know, if that would be interesting, if people actually like that idea, that'd be weird to do a spinoff of like, hey, we're gonna try these dishes. Hey, let's give it a shot, you know. We'll that'll be interesting. My wife loves cooking shows and stuff and cooking YouTube channels, and so she'll I love cooking too,
so yeah, and experimenting, you know, I like to experiment with food, so
So what about personality wise think about your childhood, or even as you've grown up, did you ever feel like you were imitating, or do you felt like you were more authentic?
You know, it's funny, I assume that everyone was authentic, and I don't know why, and it could have just been like maybe how my dad was. My dad was like, I mean, he was transparent. You knew there was nothing to be hidden. Like if he was upset, you knew he was upset, and he would let you know. You know, if he was happy, you'd know. And so maybe I just, and basically if he said it, it was just true. And so I was used to always hearing that. And I remember, you know, growing up in school, kids would say they're doing this or that's going on in their lives. And I was just like, this is crazy. Like I'm so far behind as far as like the things I should be doing, you know, like.
Do you have any examples?
Yes and no.
Like, so are you further behind in like extracurriculars, hobbies?
Yeah, school? Sure. Let's go with like maybe basketball. Like maybe, you know, kids be like, oh, I'm doing this. I'm hitting this many threes. Oh, I could dunk. And, you know, of course you never saw them dunk, but they're like, yeah, I could dunk. I can't do it now. My ankle hurts or whatever. I'm sore from it. You know, so you're just like, I'm behind the curve. Or like maybe in motocross, like they're, you know, talking about setting certain lap times or jumping these big jumps, you know, and you know, so all of a sudden, you know, I found myself putting a lot of pressure on myself to perform and thinking I'm behind, and like I just couldn't get to that level. I'm just like, how are these guys doing it? And then we would show up to maybe a competitive event or whatever, and then it was like all of a sudden, like I was thriving, and I'm like, it took me a few years for me to really realize what was going on there, that they were just lying. They were just lying flat out. And I started to find that even more, you know, in my early 20s, like people were just, they would just talk out of the side of their neck and it meant nothing. And I would say things and they would, whatever. I'm like, why don't they believe what I'm saying?
Because you try to be more honest, but if they were lying, why aren't you lying?
Yeah, exactly. But that's the thing. And, you know, obviously, like an authentic person is going to assume that when someone says something, they're being honest about it. I've learned to test that, make sure that they're either telling the truth or they're lying, and then you can kind of understand, okay, I'm dealing with a liar or I'm dealing with someone who is real. You know, but I would say something and they would basically just blow it off. They would say something, I'd be like, they're telling the truth, because I didn't know any better. I didn't know any better. I just assumed that they were being real. A lot of experiences have taught me how to find out who's real and who's fake.
As a callback to the authenticity requires challenges. Mm-hmm. You know, anything that's authentic, especially if it's going to be a good authentic, you know, it's going to require some kind of challenges. And so you were basically going up against their lies. And like you said, motocross or whatever it is you're doing. So you were going up against their standard of lying. Mm-hmm. And you weren't just going trying to be better than yourself. You're trying to be better than what they presented as, even though it was lying. They said they could do better.
Yeah.
And that actually made you better.
Yeah.
As a person. So regardless, there's still a standard that you were beating, but they weren't hitting that themselves by any stretch.
Well, so it's funny that you say that. Now, even in things that I'm doing, people will tell me all the stuff that they're doing, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to achieve that. Now I know that they're lying. I'm old enough. I'm 35. I've been down this road. they're lying about that, but I'm going to achieve that and some. That way, let's say in golf, someone will say they shot a certain score, and I'm just like, man, I mean, like, that's tough to do. But then I'll go out and I will be like, well, I can't beat that score, but I'm going to try and get good enough to where I can beat them when they cheat.
Right.
Still, there's just nothing they can do about it. You know?
Well, yeah, yeah. So, but you're not going to try to, like, beat that one golfer by, you know, trying to drive past a police barricade.
I might not set him up for any type of failures like that. Yeah, I might, you know, pay off a cop or something. I'm not going to do anything like that. No.
You can go to prison for 4 years. I'll go for 10.
Yeah. I'm not going to.
But yeah, so like my own self, I had to, man, that was a whole journey of, again, finding myself, finding authenticity. I really couldn't nail down my own personality for a long time when I was a kid. I was basically a chameleon. I tried on a lot of hats, mm-hmm. trying to figure things out. Even when I was in college, I just adopted different, whoever I was around, you know, and really I just tried it on, trying to find what was genuine.
You tried to find yourself.
I tried to find myself.
You were finding yourself.
But again, not in the, I'm just going to go travel the world and find what I like, you know. I mean, yeah. There's probably some variation of that, but still, I just wanted to, like, who am I? And so it really wasn't until I moved to Florida. I was away from everyone I knew. There was one family that I knew down there, but I wasn't even seeing them like every day or whatever. It was like once or twice a week. It was at church, you know. So, it wasn't until then where I had to actually kind of stand on my own. And then I started to find out who I was, you know. And so that was kind of, a lot of the other stuff was taken away. And so I wasn't just a friend of this friend group. I wasn't just my parents' kid. I wasn't just a member of this church or this group or whatever. They knew me as me. That kind of set me up. A couple years later, I met the woman who would be my wife, and that was good. So she didn't see that some version of me where I'm trying to, you know, present, you know, this style or that or whatever. And
trying to be something you're not.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I remember, because we were childhood friends and everything, I was always impressed, like, man, this kid, like, he knows who he is. He knows what he's doing. Like, it's, you know, put his mind to it and he doesn't. I'm like, I just still can't figure out who I am. And you know, we can do a whole episode series on some of the psychological stuff, you know, maybe just go to a therapy session, just record it. That would be great.
Like, I can't say that I knew who I was.
You seemed a lot more confident.
I was confident. I think, you know, I don't know. I think that was just kind of like my parents, their support. They were always, you know, like, pushing me, but they were never belittling me. You know, they would talk me up a lot. So I think that's where that came from. But at the same time, like I said, I thought everybody was better than me, you know.
Yeah.
And so then it was like, I'm basically just trying to catch up, and little did I know where I actually stood in that, you know. But there was things I would mimic and copy, just doing anything that I could, you know. And I thought I was actually pretty stupid. I thought I was actually, I didn't think I was very smart, basically. I thought I was I was probably the dumbest guy.
Yeah, I felt like that a lot throughout. Like my wife has to, like, remind me that I'm not as bad as I think I am.
Yeah.
You know, at any given thing or whatever. I'm glad that I have a spouse who will recognize that and be able to communicate with me, honestly.
Well, you know, it's funny because they actually say that people who are highly intelligent don't think they're very smart.
Right.
So that's, you know.
Like I said, go back to Uncle Socrates there. He was the wisest person, you know, and was it the Oracle of Delphi said, this Socrates, like, well, I know I'm not. And part of his death, I mean, there's, you know, more details to it, but part of the reason he got sentenced to death is because he was like, well, maybe the Oracle of Delphi is not that smart. Maybe she's not that, does not hearing from the gods. So then they gave him what I call a hemlock spice latte to wash down that blasphemy with.
Right, right.
But anyways, yeah, so it's like there's, you know, this idea that, you know, the more you intelligent you are, and I think with wisdom comes with that too, not just knowledge.
Yeah.
You start to realize there's so much that I don't know. And there's that nice fine line of humility and then like self degradation too, that you don't need to go into that. But actually that kind of leads me into a thought here about relationships.
Uh-huh.
Like, how do you know your wife's being authentic with you?
When she can just be straight up honest with me.
Yeah.
If for me, and this is in any relationship, I don't want to be patronized. I don't want to be told, I don't want to like a pat on the back if it's not real, if it's not deserving. You know, I want to know exactly where I stand with my wife or with a friend at all times. If they think that I'm being a certain way, tell me. If they think I'm being an idiot, tell me. I need to know these things. I do not want to hear, well, you know, and then come up with an excuse that maybe I'm doing a good thing or I'm doing a bad thing, whatever.
I think that's an interesting comment you mentioned there. I want to hone in on that for a minute, that you kind of want to know kind of where you stand and how that is at all times. Mm-hmm. You know, so is that, because I feel like that too. I'm like, okay, constantly, are we still good? Are we good? You know, and so,
yeah.
And that's, again, sometimes it goes too far, mm-hmm. you know, as I kind of go down the, you know, spiral. So, again, I can't thank my wife enough. Like, she knows me. When you're married for a decade or more, like, you tend to know each other. And so she knows that if she has to criticize me for something, mm-hmm. you know, like, hey, you know, you failed to do this, or, you know, you need to do this better, whatever, she'll also follow that up with, but hey, we're still good. I just, you know, you gotta step it up here a little bit, or maybe don't do that thing again, because that really hurt me when you did that, or whatever.
That is good. That's very reassuring. Yeah, I can see how, like, you know, you can take that as like, yeah, you're upset with me and you hate me or something.
And again, like I said, that can go back. You know, I probably have a long history of stuff in childhood too, where it's like, hey, you know, it's good to know that. You know, if there's something done wrong, you don't hate me.
It's not personal.
It's not personal. It's just I want you to be objective. Better.
Yeah.
And so I read something a while ago. It was really interesting. It was talking about different generations in the workplace and how you needed to know that you were good and that the job, you know, accepted you, your job's not on the line, that sort of thing. And I think it was like boomers were essentially, you give me a paycheck and I know we're good. Gen X is like, hey, let's do a once a year review. You know, make sure that we're, you know, everything's good. Am I missing something? Do I need to grow or whatever? They're good once a year. Maybe a second one sprinkled in there. Right. Millennials, we need like a once a month review. It doesn't have to be a long one.
But like, you're giving me a compliment in a while. Am I doing a bad job?
Right,
I just like, want to know.
can you give me like 5 minutes a month, boss? And just, hey, am I doing good? Am I doing right? I mean, can I fix anything? Yeah. It's like, it seems to be like generation, but Z and on. It's you kind of get to this part where you're like, you know, they need updates like every 7 seconds.
Yeah.
I think that's, I don't know if that's just a millennial thing or what it is, but, you know, it does seem like we kind of often need some sort of affirmation.
Yeah.
And not even just to prop up your ego or to keep you out of the depths of depression, but there's that constant, like, I don't know where I stand. And there's something good about having the confidence of knowing where you stand. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think authenticity can play into that, where if you are more authentic into you, because there's this idea of like, hey, I just don't care what other people think about me. That was a big thing when we were growing up too.
Yeah.
But you easily go into arrogance there. Yeah. And that's not good. You don't want to be arrogant. I just want to be like, I want to be right. Not just, I have to be right all the time, but like, I want to be accurate.
And of course, I think too, you know, saying, you know, I don't care what anybody thinks of me. I think that that's just I know that's a defense mechanism. Yeah,
that's not actually
of insecurity.
True.
Yeah. They're so afraid to know what someone thinks of them, that they just don't want to hear it. Basically, that's how that goes. I know for me, if you think I'm doing a bad job or you think I'm doing the wrong thing, tell me. And I tell you what, I'm probably going to argue and I'm probably going to say that you're wrong. But I'm going to go home that night and I'm going to think about it.
Yes.
And I'm going to come back the next day and I'm probably going to go with what, you know, that person told me.
Right. And I want to maybe get your thoughts on like social media and everything. But before I do that, I want to check, see how that was with you in your childhood. Mm. If your parents, again, said you did something wrong or whatever it is, like your parents got onto you, or if your parents had a rule, were you ever able to negotiate with your parents? Or was it always, nope, I said the rule and that's it?
Or if you had chores you had to do? No, if it was my mom, I could negotiate and sometimes just completely get out of whatever it was. If it was my dad, I learned the hard way. If he says it, just do it, because it's not going to end well for me if I don't. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm just curious, could you ever say, hey, you know, I know you need me to do, I don't know, the dishes or mow the yard or whatever. Can I do that later in the day if I can do something else first? Or is it always, no, I say it and you need to stop what you're doing and do it?
Okay. It's the latter. Yeah. I think that, or even, you know, and they wouldn't be home whenever I was supposed to do my chores, and so I would like maybe fake it, like the vacuum. This was so stupid. I was an idiot. I was a kid. And I I didn't plug in the vacuum, but I would run it all over the entire house just to show there was a path there. Now, the simplest thing of just plugging it in, I was like, I didn't. That was too much. That was too far. I didn't want to do that. So
it literally would have taken you 6 more seconds to.
And then I could have turned. I don't know if it was like it stressed me out to have the machine on, and then like I was like, oh, I gotta, you know, it's just so hard to unravel the wire.
Yeah, here's the question: did you unravel the cord, or did you leave the cord on there?
No, I would unravel it. And my dad, he was weird about it. Like he didn't, you know how they got the little latches that you
right.
wrap the cord around. He didn't like that. He said that was the wrong way to do it. You wanted to coil it properly, you know, and create the coil yourself. Yeah. So you know, and he was right, but it was excessive.
So, yeah. I gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, I was able to. The older I got, the more I was able to like negotiate with my parents.
Okay.
And I think that was a good for me. That was good to teach me how to, you know, find a path forward where both parties can be happy. So my parents were like, "Look, the dishes have to get done.
Mm-hmm.
They can't wait a week. They've got to get done." You know, when I was elementary or middle school, like my parents were out. We would wait until the last possible second to do the stuff, and or even when they were somewhere, they were out. Like, oh yeah, you got these like. This 30 minutes of chores you got to work on in the house, and I would wait until 20 minutes until they were got home to knock it out, and then just sit there pretending like we did it early in the morning. But you know, the older I got, the little more trust they had. But even when it was I didn't get caught doing anything bad for the most part. But it was if my parents had said something or they put a rule down that I didn't like it, I was allowed to contest it if I did it respectfully. And I guess I proved myself enough.
Yeah.
You know, there's one thing, and my mom will never forget this, but there was one point where my parents were convinced, this, you know, you got to do this or whatever the rule was. And I was like, well, I respectfully disagree. Which no, most you people, do. That's a recipe for getting slapped.
Yeah.
If my brother said it, he would have been. But for me, again, they knew me enough, my character, that, you know, I was... you know, trying to figure it out and work it out. And I presented a counter offer, you know, whatever, different option. Uh-huh. And I think their rule still won out, but at least they heard my point of view.
Yeah.
And for me, that showed me that they respected me enough as a person to listen to what I have to say.
I like that,
Where they can still overrule it. And so, you know, not every kid can deal with that, you know, like, and not every parent is ready to do that.
I feel like, honestly, that way, I might have thrived better. I might have been able to, you know, just be adulting. I would have adulted better early on. Adulted better,
yeah. Yeah, I can't say enough how much I think that has helped me, you know, in life, be able to, again, find a path forward. So one of the things that's kind of authentic to me, and not unique necessarily, but authentic, is I want to be kind of like a peacemaker. You know, I want to find the path forward. Not only do I want to search for truth and what's true, but also, like, I want to learn from both perspectives, multiple perspectives are on an option. If there's a division,
a little more diplomatic.
Yeah, definitely a lot more diplomatic. And so if there's you know, division between a couple of people, I want to try to find the path through that to find the peaceful solution, help each other understand what they're actually saying, and see if there is something without having to compromise anything important. So that's where. So I think that's definitely helped shape me be who I am. And there's, you know, trial and error and becoming better at that.
No, I can definitely see that in you.
Yeah. But like I mentioned, social media, you know, I don't want to necessarily hit on the stuff that everyone says all the time, but, you know, a basic question is, like, how do you think, like, social media has influenced our perception of other people with their authenticity or imitation? So maybe another way to think of it is their online persona. Like, how much of that is them, and how much of that is, like, can it possibly even be just an image that somebody puts on? Like, is that even possible without being a part of you, you know?
I think even to an extent of being an authentic person on social media, I think that there's still some imitation there, because if you're popular, it's because you're getting likes and follows, and you have to be doing something that's trending, or you have to just start a trend altogether.
Right.
And I think that's going to be the most authentic of all of them, is the person who actually starts the trend. But then I think, you know, it becomes competitive, you know, because at that point money starts to get involved. So yeah, I mean, I would say the most authentic is going to be at least 20% imitation.
Okay.
and then anybody there following the trend is 100% imitation.
Right.
So yeah, they're trying to. I don't even think there's really an in between on that percentage. I think it's just, going to be.
If I had to guess, probably almost everyone online who does the imitation game has said they don't care about what other people think about them at some point.
Oh, they 100% care.
But yeah, so and I think, you know, when you're online, you know, there is, yes, you're kind of hiding behind either a username or even your name, but you're still, it's online and you're not face to face with somebody. But what you're presenting, it may not be all of you, but it's a part of you.
Yeah.
And it shapes your character too. So, like, in my observation, like Instagram is where you typically go to say that you're better than you really are. So people kind of show off on Instagram. Twitter or X now is where you get to, you feel free to like rage out all the time, and you, the anger part of you gets let out. And Reddit is where you go to express your own self-deprecation and joke on yourself and dunk on yourself all the time. And there's obviously, you know, exclusions and, you know, exceptions and all of those, but it's interesting that the kind of persona, again, you have on Instagram is less real and raw about who you are. It's sometimes, but most of the time it's not. And then on Twitter, it's basically everyone's up for grabs and you get to express your anger and your irritation and owning somebody.
I never actually got on Twitter.
Yeah.
I never signed up for it. I never did.
And then deleted it. But it's interesting, you know, I try not to follow a whole lot of people. But you know, it's an alternate way to get information without having to, you know,
I just
go through all the depths of, like, it's like little quick bits. It's not that you want to read your news by headlines or anything.
Right.
But it gives you like, oh, hey, this general thing's going on. If I'm interested, I'll research it further. Sort of thing.
I kind of wished I had gotten on Twitter, but like it got to a point where it was like, dude, it's kind of like, you know, playing video games online now. It's like, I wish maybe I got into like doing Call of Duty way back. Because if I try and play now, it's not fun at all.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with Twitter. I don't understand like the cues there, like socially, like how you're supposed to interact with this platform.
Anything that can be argued about will be argued about on Twitter. Like there's just like you could have somebody who, if they have some recognition, maybe a few thousand followers or more, I mean, they're the most like benign thing is going on, and some people will agree with whatever they're saying, not even controversial stuff. So like, hey, here's an interesting observation I made, or here's this funny thing, and people will come in out of nowhere and say, yeah, but you support this person, or you like this, and you're, you know, that makes you a horrible person. It's like, dude, I literally just put a picture of my grandma up there and said she's a sweet old lady at 100 years old and happy birthday.
Wow.
Why does my political beliefs come into this?
Wow. Yeah.
that's some ridiculous stuff.
For me, I got Facebook, I got Instagram. That is plenty for me. Yeah. I'll get my tweets on Instagram with the screenshots. And
right.
That's as far as that goes.
But yeah, I think, you know, as it comes to all that, it's still you.
Yeah.
When you're presenting that. And unfortunately, it's training you to do things in a certain way. So if you're, you know, on Twitter all the time, I guarantee, you know, with a little asterisk, 99.9%, you know, would guarantee that you are more argumentative.
For sure.
You know, or you will become more that way than you would
protective outer otherwise. Shell there. Think right. about being in your car, like the amount of road rage that there is.
Yeah.
Like, would you
road
do
rage
that?
Online is basically what it is, yeah.
Yeah, if someone cut you off in a store, like walked in front of you, are you going to yell at them and, you know, flick them off or try and cuss at them or whatever, right. however?
Well, you're an American South, you just say, bless their heart.
Yeah, but most of the time... you're like, that guy's right there. He could just punch me. When you're driving in the car, you're like, nah, I got all this metal surrounding me. Like, I'm totally fine. Like, I can just yell at them and they can't do a thing about it. Of course, you know, they could, but still... it's the same thing, you know, with the keyboard warriors. I mean, like, nobody knows you, especially when they're like calling out like a celebrity or like an athlete of some sort, you know. They just don't hold back and say just the most hurtful things. Like, dude, that guy's still a human, you
right?
know? So
if you're, you know, on these platforms, you kind of have to realize that you're gonna need thick skin. And most people that I've heard of, like, especially when they have lots of following and people are really nasty, they just don't read the comments. If they're big enough that they have like an assistant or somebody, they'll have them read through the comments and find anything that's worth reading or worth knowing. But
they don't really operate it for them, and they're just kind of doing their thing. And don't
that's
get
a
along.
Lot of what happens too.
Yeah.
So we're gonna try to, you know, start winding down a little bit here. Mm-hmm. But as far as authenticity, your authentic self, do you think that can change, or is there this identity that you have that you have to uncover, and that's always been you, or is that something that you think can change?
It can absolutely change, and it can go from one to the other. You can be incredibly authentic and go to an imitator, and vice versa.
Yeah. Or your authentic self could be good.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and you maybe change from your authenticity is good to your authenticity is now not good, to put it nicely.
Yeah.
You know. So it's like you're constantly changing.
Yeah.
You know, the trajectory is depending on what you're doing today. And, you know, I think it's important to know, because a lot of the things that we see today, or that I'm hearing and observing out in the wilds of the, you know,
the lands,
the wilds of the city, and the social media, but there's this idea of identity where, you know, this is this intrinsic, innate identity. It's always who you are, and you can't change it. And you basically need to discover yourself and accept it. And this is your true self,
you know,
as if it's like a whole extra entity
apart
from you, and it's immovable.
You know, I would always hear people talk about, like, their kids or my wife, you know, the way our parents would talk about it. I was like, oh, you're going to be this one day. You're good at that. You're going to be this one day. And it's just not true. Like, I think you have capabilities, maybe more natural talent in certain things. But, you know, it's like my wife, she was basically told that she was an artist. And so what did she do? She went out and she did art. And now her hand hurts really bad. She's got carpal tunnel and she can't do it.
Oh, dang.
You know? But she's only an artist because she practices doing art.
Right.
So she started practicing Spanish now. Now she can speak, you know, Spanish very well.
Yeah, cool.
You know, and there's just like so many different things that you can actually do and become that you don't have to. You don't have to basically take a label and say, this is who I am. That's just who I am. You can change at any minute or of the day and decide your fate, your outcome, and who you are.
Yeah.
You know, some of the most, we'll go to motocross because that's what I know. There's a guy named Ricky Carmichael who is now considered the GOAT of motocross. Not very athletic. You have to be very athletic to do that sport. But he's not that athletic. But yet he's the GOAT. So,
okay.
I mean, right there. And that's, you know, that's happened several times in, you know, sports history where the guy who didn't seem like he was capable. I mean, even look at David, like, right?
Right.
Defeating Goliath. Like, that's not your guy. Look at him.
Yeah.
And then, you know.
Yeah, something I think I found interesting. You listen to, you know, stories, people who, especially Navy SEALs, you know, all the Special Forces, Navy SEALs is one in particular that's interesting. You have, like, the athletes, the, you know, the guys who, like, they're intimidating from across the room just in their build and structure. They always fail, almost without exception. And it's the unassuming guys who push through and they're able to go through that challenge. They're able to find that, which is...
And it's that belief.
For,
you believe what you are. If you think that you're this or you think that you're that, if you think that you're stupid, guess what? You're going to be stupid. If you think that you're successful, guess what? You're going to be successful.
Yeah. Or I would say at least the thoughts that you have drive your actions.
Correct.
And so, like, if I might think, hey, I'm stupid or I'm a failure, that might inspire me to do the opposite. Like, I might, like, hey, I'm not a success yet. I want to be a success. So it's kind of like, maybe if you think, like, there's forces that pull you forward.
No, I mean...
And push you forward. And so it's kind of like you're... Like, I want to push away from failure. I want to push towards success.
Well, it's... If you start telling yourself, I am a success in life, right? I am a successful this. I am a successful that. Guess what? You're going to act on it. Why? Because you're not going to... You're not going to lie to yourself. I mean, maybe you will.
Well, yeah, a lot of people do. lots of people do lie to themselves.
But if you constantly tell yourself that every day, you start to believe it. It's like, think of it in, and we'll go back to sports. If you tell yourself in basketball that you're better than the next guy, you're like, I'm better than that guy, right? And he starts to show you up. What are you going to do? You're going to train your butt off until you are much better than
him.
Okay,
that's what I was wanting to uncover a bit. Because there is this idea, well, if you just say this, you repeat this all the time.
No, I mean, you can't, like, go into...
It requires action. And so it's kind of like it's charting your trajectory.
Yeah.
Like, your trajectory is getting fixed by what it is you believe.
Yeah.
And then you have to move. You have to move on that.
And then, yeah, exactly. Set
Not
a date,
lazy.
Whatever it might be. You know, schedule something, whatever. Think about when we went to the moon.
Last week, right? You and me?
Yeah. John F. Kennedy said, you know, we're going to the moon. And he set the date of exactly when we were going. We did not have the technology to get to the moon. but he set the date.
Right.
And we had
it was the race.
I can't remember exactly the date that he set it, but
I think it was supposed to be within a decade.
Yeah, it was definitely at the end of the 60s. He 69, I think it was.
Yeah. Got in there at the last minute, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And we did it. We hit the mark, you know, and it was because we said yeah, no, there's another one, yeah, and then we'll have to go into the flatter.
That actually would be a fun conspiracy episode. How about this? If anyone has any great idea for conspiracy episodes, either email us or send us a message on Facebook or YouTube. Like, let us know what conspiracies you would like us to uncover.
I love a good conspiracy.
Yeah, that would be great. Maybe have a debate from a conspiracy person versus a non-conspiracy. That'd be interesting.
Oh, I'm out to debunk it, but I'm absolutely open to having...
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, you got to be open for the conversation, but... So to kind of bring back into the authenticity conversation here, the idea of whether your authentic self is something that can move, it's like a moving target, or if it is, stagnant. That's one of the problems I have with a horoscope. What's your sign? It's like,
yeah.
Oh, okay, I'm a jerk, but I'm an Aries or whatever. I don't know. I'm probably offending somebody with their, I don't know. I'm so mindless. I don't really, stay on top of doing anything because I'm a Cancer. It's like, you're a Cancer to your friendships, but you're not. Yeah, I don't care about you. You're born. And honestly, the Enneagram does the same thing. Like the 1 through 9, I'm like a 9 and like a 3 and a 6 with the wings. And the problem with it, it's nice to have some type of psychological model to kind of help you know where you're at and what are your preset biases are and all that. But
that's that's in the moment. That's right then. That's just right in that moment.
But you say, this is me, and this is going to determine who I am. Mm-hmm. Whether it's a horoscope, or Enneagram, Myers-Briggs, whatever it is, I'm going to be this type of person. I can't escape it. And I think that's a major problem in life, because you can escape it. Mm-hmm. You might be naturally drawn to certain things. There are other personality tests that would help you understand, okay, I'm more open than closed off. I'm more open to positive emotion versus negative emotion. You respond to things differently. And so that kind of helps you understand, okay, this is more of my stats, mm-hmm. and I can change, or I can be able to move forward considering that. Mm-hmm. So if you're an introverted person, you still can do something.
You can absolutely extroverted, be extroverted, yeah.
Or at least you can thrive in that,
yeah.
But you have to be able to consider where you're at. And so your authenticity, I think it is definitely a moving thing. And one, I think, is an example. I knew somebody once who, he was more like, I'll tell you like it is, not very tactful. And I was having a conversation with him. I was like, you kind of have to learn how to be tactful in some degree. Like, it's not, you can still be, I can tell it like it is, but there's you got to know when to hold and know when to fold. He said, that's just not me. I just can't be tactful. I'm like, if you say that, you're going to never be tactful. But
you got to learn.
You got to learn how to, know when there is time to say something. Or, there's some people, they might need to hear it gentler than you would to somebody else who you just belittle them in the face as a way to build them up,
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, it's like I was listening to this guy who was, he set some world record for being able to tell you any certain set of numbers in pi.
Right.
And they would give him like 3 numbers, and then he would either have to name the next 3 numbers or the 3 previous numbers.
Goodness.
At any sequence. Yeah, any of those. Yeah, I know. He had to teach himself how to memorize things, and of course he was able to do that through compartmentalization.
Right.
And basically he ended up saying anybody can have an incredibly strong memory, does not matter your age, because he's an older guy. And so you always hear older people are like, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, you absolutely can, you just don't believe it. You have to first believe it.
Believe it and be willing.
Henry Ford said, there's a man who says it can be done, and there's a man who says it can't be done. Who's right? Or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. But who's right? They both are. They're both right.
Yeah.
So
that's fair. Yeah. Yeah. It can't be done until it can, and the can is going to be the person who, I feel like I'm getting a word salad here, but basically the person who believes that it can and works on it, if they're either going to be successful or they're going to lay the steps for the next person to be successful there.
Yeah. If you want to be authentic, you need to start believing yourself to be an authentic person. And next time someone gives you, maybe too much change back, you'll remember, wait a minute, this isn't me. I'm authentic. I need to give them back, I'm not going to steal this money from them. Or, somebody asks you a question about your game in a sport, be real with them at that point, because that's who you believe that you are,
Yeah.
Versus the imitator who is going to, I could go down a rabbit hole with that, that conversation. I'm not going
to
go there.
And we're getting a little bit late in the episode too, to kind of open a whole new,
I don't want to trail
here.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I think, maybe some other practical steps in life, can you think of anything more down to earth in your daily life where you could see that the difference between authenticity or imitation, where pursuing a good authenticness is better? So like you mentioned, something as simple as getting the wrong change at the store, if you pay in cash, because most is on card now, at least where we're at.
Yeah.
But yeah, that, or, maybe even at work and you get credit for something that you didn't do.
There's a lot of, that's usually my day to day, or, you have to just keep yourself in check and really, really look down deep within yourself and just be like, am I being true right now? Or am I just, giving myself credit that I don't deserve? Or it's really an internal fight the mm-hmm. whole time, but you have to learn to be honest with yourself. And that is such a hard thing for us to do. Like when you're telling yourself, I'm an authentic person, you're not lying to yourself, unless there's no action behind it, like you said.
Right. But I think maybe another way to kind of consider this too is, so it's a moment to moment decision, mm-hmm. So it's not always about, honesty is a very big deal. That's a big, probably one of the biggest factors in authenticity and imitation, because imitation is essentially built on a lie, usually insecurity or whatever it is. It's built on some form of a lie. But, how do you respond to somebody in traffic? You authentically might be a rage monster, but do you want to be? Take a breath, see if you tone that down a bit, give somebody some grace. If you're getting insulted by somebody, should you snap back at them, or should you just leave it alone? What's the deal? How do you do that? And so, I think, there's this idea of, there's the good and bad, and your authentic self might not be all that great. And the honesty to examine yourself, like I said, Uncle Socrates, the unexamined life is not worth living. And when you examine yourself, you're going to find a lot of things that are not good about yourself. Yeah. But the great thing is, you don't have to stay that way.
Sure.
And, and obviously I found in Christ that's the biggest thing, is that, it's not just that Jesus came to save us, which, that and I believe, but one of the great things after that is that the Holy Spirit works in us to make us better. Mm-hmm. And it's like a partnership, that there's this like, hey, I'm not perfect yet. But you know what? I'm pushing towards it. And it's not just by my help, but it's the help of God too.
Yeah.
But I'll, get upset when someone rides my tail on the expressway, or when my son does something just to really, there's sometimes a noise that he'll make that just really sends shivers down my spine okay, you don't need to do this.
Yeah. And you gotta, it's almost like, and you gotta almost try and keep yourself in check. But, like you said, a lot of it, I would say a lot of that, authenticity is going to come from your spirituality.
Yeah.
I know it's same for me. Mm-hmm. When I developed my relationship with God, I found out a lot of things about myself that were, for me, it embarrassed me and made me feel a lot of, shame, even though, I know it was okay. It was fine. But, I thought I was better than that, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's like turning a light on in a messy room. Like, it's messy, yeah, you, but the light's you, on, and you now see you it, see it.
And then you maybe see it from another perspective, and you're like, yikes.
Pro tip, if you're, if you're young enough and you listen to this, and your parents still got to check your room, make sure it's clean, unscrew the light bulbs so they can't turn the light on.
Can't turn the light on.
But make sure that's not your actual life, that you don't actually do that,
that
you allow the light to turn on and to work on that. And so that way, not just that you're authentic, but you can be authentically good. Mm-hmm. And again, a life worth living. And when you get to the end of your life, hopefully for all the listeners, that it's the end of a really old life, and you go out peaceably and everything, but it's that you can be able to look back on your life and say it was a life well lived. And I think we'll actually explore in another episode we have planned to do, where if you're at a funeral and they say, hey, this is a good person, you know, it was a good man or a good woman, you know, who passed away. What does that mean to be good? But that's a teaser for another episode. Until then, thank you for being patient and listening. Hopefully you enjoyed it. If you have any comments, tips, anything you want to hear, you know, like this is an interesting project that we're doing here with this podcast. I like it a lot, and hopefully you like it too. But if you got any input, send us an email at chartinglifepodcast@gmail.com or find us on Facebook. I'll try to be a little bit more consistent on posting some stuff out there. But Charting Life Podcast on Facebook, let us know, you know, where you're at, where you're listening from. You're listening on, you know, earphones, you know, audio. Just are you playing your phone out loud on the subway? That's probably rude, but that's cool. But, you know, maybe you should do that to get the good word of our podcast out there, just to let people know.
Or they'll be mad. or they'll be mad and they'll have bad
then they
reviews.
Can listen to this episode and figure out what kind of authenticity they need.
Okay.
But yeah, and I've until now not said anything like the like and subscribe stuff. It's so annoying, but, you know, I see the analytics, and there are some people listening. Either you have VPNs or you're around the world, and if you aren't in America, please let me know that that's not just a random VPN. That would be really cool, because we got people, I think it was like in England and Germany and India, you know, whatever. So anyways, just kind of let us know all that stuff and do the whole like, subscribe. I can't believe I'm saying this.
Smash that subscribe button or whatever.
No, it's a, you know what, I think I've got some interesting ways to say that, but I need to I need to think about that. But anyways,
thesaurus out after this and look into that.
But we're going to make camp here on our island and think about this authenticity for a little while over some good smoked sausages and baked beans, and hopefully it does not do intestinal damage. See you next time.